That's the great Sonny Stitt and a wonderful quartet he has here with Blues Greasy. It's one of my all-time favorite tunes. It's from his 1957 album, Personal Appearance. Of course, Sonny Stitt on alto sax. He also plays a tenor on this one. Bobby Timmons on piano, Edgar Willis on bass guitar, and Kenny Dennis on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and a program I hope we can get through today. If not, we'll have to carry it over because there's a lot of information crammed into it. It is, of course, Non-Observance Day. Some places call it Columbus Day. Some states call it Native American Day. Or it would be called in some other places Indigenous Peoples Day. But it is a day to signify a transition. People who believe that the day dedicated to Columbus and being very careful never to link Columbus with the deadly aftermath of his alleged discovery of the United States. We've shared this program many times with the great Ivan van Sertima talking about Columbus in the so-called New World. It might have been new to him, but it wasn't new to the people who already were here and people who had been trading from the African continent with this part of the world for centuries before Columbus arrived. But in any event, it is an interesting turning point. Many states now are not recognizing Columbus Day and are instead recognizing the indigenous peoples of the United States who had been established as the first nations of this continent and who, of course, as you know, were subjected to centuries of oppression, annihilation, genocidal attack that continues to this very day. So, we're going to be talking today about this debacle of last night, called a debate. Jeez, you know, every time I talk about it, I have this feeling of wanting to cry out of a sense of desperation that I think that people aren't recognizing fast enough that we have reached a point of no return. We are now officially, and have been for a little while still, a kakistocracy, government by the worst possible elements of our society. That's what we're facing. And last night proved that we have gone yet another step in that direction. But first, the merchants of misery are at it again. The Clinton Foundation is back helping Haiti. And there's reason to worry. You'd think that Bill and Hillary Clinton would be gun-shy about seeking donations for their foundation's so-called charitable efforts in Haiti. But if you're thinking that, you would be wrong. In the immediate aftermath of Hurricane Matthew's October the 3rd devastation in Haiti, they've cranked up the old Clinton Foundation cash-collecting machine, asking donors to give generously to the what they're calling the Clinton Foundation community. That's the various entities are organized and being run under the Clinton Foundation umbrella, while they keep suffering Haitians in their thoughts and prayers. Very nice. Very charitable. It's how the Clintons and their foundation amassed billions of dollars in emergency aid that was to help rebuild Haiti after a 7.0 magnitude earthquake devastated the country in 2010. Haitians are still demanding to know where the money went. Financial analyst Charles Ortel, who has been our specific guide through the maze of the Clinton Foundation, and who considers the foundation, he calls it the largest unprosecuted charity fraud in U.S. history. He's with us today to discuss troubling signs that the Clintons and their foundation are continuing to operate illegally. Thank you, Charles, for being with us today.
Well, thanks for having me on you, Tracy. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Well, as I said, there are troubling signs that they're back and at it again. What signs have you been seeing?
Well, you know, the situation in Haiti, I mean, you're absolutely right. We could probably talk about this until 2060. The long troubled history down there, it's as if that poor nation and the people who live there cannot catch a break. But if we stick on the period of time when the Clinton Foundation illegally began operating in Haiti, the true story is that the earliest sign I find is Bill going down to Haiti in 2003, allegedly to, quote, fight HIV/AIDS inside Haiti. And if you look carefully in the Clinton Foundation filings, in particular at 2003, the public filings require a detailed breakdown of the activities and truthful declarations under penalties of perjury. What do we really do? You will find no mention whatsoever of activities in Haiti in 2003, though there are many press releases which say Bill began work in the name of the Clinton Foundation that year. Thereafter, you will find many, many references, 2004, 2005, 2006, mostly fighting HIV/AIDS, a purpose for which the Clinton Foundation was never lawfully organized. None of those activities were properly documented. They didn't control, as is required, the administration of any of the donated sums towards those purposes. And fighting HIV/AIDS, as we've talked in other programs, is not something that you can let some volunteer fresh out of Yale College with a big heart do because that person did well in the SATs. I mean, fighting HIV/AIDS is a technical area, and it is a tough disease to treat properly. More often than not, reading the literature, people who are afflicted with HIV are afflicted with other conditions. The medicines that are used to extend your life once it's proven that you do have HIV have toxic side effects. And so you really do need to have doctors, trained healthcare professionals, fully involved leading the process. And there's no real evidence in this early period that that's what actually happened. So they were meddling in Haiti starting in 2003. And, of course, we could forget about, you know, Bill's role as president, what he did in Haiti. That's a whole other tragic chapter. But just from 2003 forward, I would argue there was a trail of disaster under the Clinton Foundation operations in that particular poor country of Haiti. And then following the hurricane in New Orleans, Katrina, and then the subsequent episodes along the Gulf Coast, January 12, 2010, the poor nation of Haiti was hit, as we all know, very, very hard. And President Obama actually directed George W. and Bill Clinton to spearhead the international relief efforts that did spring into action. You know, what happens, Utrice, and I think your listeners are probably very much involved in this, every time we hear a tale of woe, Americans and many of us who don't really have spare money will reach into our pockets and we'll send $5 or $10 or $100 using the Internet to charities we hope are doing good work. And that's what started happening the instant of January, you know, the news came out that the poor country of Haiti was hit as hard as it was hit then. So an avalanche of money flowed towards the Clinton Foundation, towards the George W. Bush Foundation, towards other places. And as is the case throughout the troubled history of the Clinton Foundation, there is no proper record keeping for this money. So we don't really know how much money actually made it towards Bill Clinton and his various foundation enterprises starting January 12, 2010. If you look at the Clinton Foundation releases, and these are going to come back and bite them, they've been in the public domain, they can't take them out of the public domain. In the glossy annual reports that, of course, all charities like the Clinton Foundation have that make it sound like they're doing noble work, in the report for 2009 that was published in 2010, there's extensive verbiage concerning something called Clinton Foundation Haiti. There is no such foundation. There was never one legally organized. There's extensive language in this annual report about what this non-existent legal entity supposedly did. There's extensive admissions of charity fraud in it. They talk about having received over the Internet many tens of thousands of dollars of contribution, and then what happened, they claim, to the money. But, you know, in their actual audits, which are not really audits, but the things they pass off as audits, the financial audits, and in their filings to the IRS forms for the main Clinton Foundation in 9 and 10, there's no granular evidence that that money actually was solicited properly or expended properly. Then they formed this Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund. That was formed on January 28, 2010. It was approved by the IRS as a charity retroactively back to its formation on April 28, 2010. In May of 2010, from information that is purposefully omitted from the Clinton Foundation website, but which is available to a persistent person like you or like me, through the New York State Charity Bureau website and through other means, you find out that about $34 million or so cash money was sent to that entity in May, and that by the end of 2010, about $50 million of cash money was sent to that entity. But the money that was sent from the Clinton Foundation in their books, supposedly towards this entity, was sent to a post office box in Maryland where there was no Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund. So you just, it doesn't take very long before you see this for what it is. The Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund was a complete fraud. They didn't capture all the money that went in properly. They never registered it properly. They never filed forms properly. And what they did is they appear to have involved members of the Bush family establishment in this thing. So you have a case here where establishment types on the right and then the Clinton followers on the left can stymie, you know, for a time here, any valid inquiry into this fraud, because they're able to say, listen, you know, Republicans, if you look into this, Republicans are going to get harmed, and then Democrats can say the same thing. So, you know, neither the Democrats nor the Republicans want this to be understood fully, which, you know, brings us back to the opening question of yours. I mean, here we have these poor people in Haiti. Where are the grown-ups across the political spectrum who will join with those wonderful Haitians who were last week in front of Attorney General Schneiderman's office, who are demanding to know what happened to the billions in aid that were sent to all these people who like to go to these charity parties and preen in front of cameras and write books about their service to the poor? What happened to those billions of dollars of money? And why is it, and any time politicians get involved with something that's supposedly a success, we hear about the success before it happened. We're now talking 6 years later, and yet another disaster has hit this island and these poor people. And, you know, it's as if you're letting drug addicts, you know, run a drug treatment facility. I mean, drug dealers run a drug treatment facility. I mean, it's ridiculous. Where, show me, in the long history of this Clinton Foundation, show me one verified instance where the Clinton Foundation has done anything it said it was going to do within the letter and spirit of the law. You cannot do so. This is a case study in ongoing, unprosecuted charity fraud by an unrepentant bunch of people who live their lives, it would seem, lying under oath and obstructing justice. That's what you see in this Clinton Foundation. And it's a tragedy that, you know, your name, Utrice, and my name, all Americans, there's many Americans across the spectrum, give generously to charities. And, you know, what do the people of Haiti know? They know this foundation. They wonder how Americans could let a former president do what they're doing to Haiti year after year after year. I mean, the Clintons have the people of Haiti underneath their shoes, underneath their boots. They're driving this island into the dirt. And, you know, we're just letting them do it. It's just unbelievable to me.
Well, it's unbelievable to me, too. It's unbelievable to most people who, once they get to understand the story and the complexity of it, And they get to understand the brazenness of the conduct of the Clintons and this foundation that they supposedly headed up to do good things. It's not just about the money. Haiti, I've always said it. If you really want to understand the really unusual behaviors of the Clintons in terms of abuse of power, the greed, the unmitigated greed that caused them to just look at Haiti as their own private little playground. They could do whatever they wanted to do. Because apart from the business of going to get the money based on the misery, now we talk about hundreds of thousands of people dead as a result of the earthquake, more than a million displaced as a result of the earthquake in 2010, and 6 years have gone by and nobody could see what it is, all this aid that was flowing toward Haiti, what it did. They're still now reeling from the same unsafe structures that they had to return to after the earthquake, which of course could not withstand the force of a hurricane, and it added to the death toll, which is now creeping toward 1,000. And the other catastrophes that ensued, because now you're having problems with getting access to clean water, the return of cholera, you have crops that have been destroyed, crops, by the way, many of which were planted or supplanted by the Clintons themselves to rearrange the agricultural sector of Haiti for the purpose of satisfying U.S.-based donors. So this is actually not more than just theft. This is a crime against humanity. And that's how we have to understand Clintons in Haiti. Let's take a look at how the Clintons protected the economic pillaging in Haiti with political protection in the United States. How is it possible? We've skirted this question before. How is it possible that an organization just so out of control could get away with not just taking and redirecting, I'm being kind, using the word redirecting, funds that were supposed to go toward rebuilding and reconstructing the country. But now you have Hillary Clinton, who is Secretary of State, personally, as Dottie Sherry told us, personally organizing the government to suit their whims, personally installing the president that she wanted, who was a performer, had not ever held a public office, and who was able, they were able to manipulate not just the disappearance of these funds, but also you had the question of political protection was the organization of the country the way they wanted it. You had Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton organizing a coup, then bringing back Aristide. I mean, they did whatever they wanted to do. They were like gangsters. So how does this happen with a president, an African-American president, by the way, who seems to have afforded them an unusual amount of coverage and protection?
Well, I think the way the Clintons play, and if you go and when we read and refresh our recollection of history, what you learn, I think, in the Russian Revolution and other revolutions, it doesn't really take many people to change a government if you're prepared to act way outside the law, and if the timing is right. So the Clintons are students of that. Hillary, after all, was a student of Saul Alinsky. And you know, they basically ran you could say they ran the equivalent of a banana dictatorship in Arkansas. And, you know, once they won in 1992, I don't think they expected to win. Once they won, they changed the rules in Washington, D.C. to Arkansas rules. And they were in a position for 8 long years where they had access to all the country's secrets. We know, because it's a matter of public record, that some people around the Clintons, maybe not they themselves, but people around the Clintons, pulled files on 900 people that we know of. And they had a long time to insert their operatives throughout many branches of the U.S. government. They had time to cultivate and feel around the world and learn who may be part of the same sort of, who may be prepared to pervert the administration of government to their personal and political and, you can say in quotes, philanthropic aims. They had ample time to forge these networks. And then with Hillary out as a senator, Bill out of the White House, they were in the unusual position, never having happened, I'd say, in American history, where a future candidate and perhaps a leading candidate to be president of the United States was linked to a foundation. So that created an opportunity to raise billions of dollars, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars, and they figured the system out very early. They said, listen, if it's simple, instead of having independent trustees, we're going to have lackeys. Every person in from 97 forward, every single person till about 2012-13 who operated inside the main foundation was enthralled to the Clinton family one way or another. So there were no independent trustees. There was no independent accounting. And all of the attorneys general in the United States, Republicans and Democrats alike, have let this thing operate as a rogue charity far outside the law, rumble around the world, raise money all over the world. It's a gigantic stinking mess. And, you know, there's a phrase that has been applied in real estate land that, you know, if you borrow $1 million to buy a house from a bank, the bank owns you. If you borrow $10 billion from a bank and it goes wrong, you own the bank. And that's what the Clintons did. They've created a mess so large that to expose it means you have to expose people who either failed to see this, smart people like Bill Gates, who either failed to see this fraud or saw it for what it was and reasoned better to cooperate and, you know, help these people and buy a get-out-of-jail-free card, maybe in Europe and in the U.S., against people looking at the monopolistic practices back then of Microsoft. And a lot of people have, smart people, Fred Eichner, the wealthy donor in Chicago, has given, I think, more than $10 million, maybe more than $25 million to this fraud. You know, and he's a smart guy. You know, he's made a lot of very shrewd investments. He's a very generous guy. He knows the lay of the land very well. He's won various awards for his support for the gay community. And here's a man who gave money, it's in the disclosure forms, in the low millions of dollars to, in theory, fight HIV/AIDS using a charity that was never authorized for that, operating in a country where the penalties for charity fraud are death, execution. Failing that, life in prison. You know, he's the man who knew better. The people who operate the Children's Investment Fund Foundation in London and in America now, it's TWIN. Those are really super smart people who made a name for themselves arguing that investment managers were not as careful with their money as they needed to be. So their specialty is doing the extra kind of homework that separates the men and women from the children in the investment world. Then they decided they'd create a foundation. Well, they were either willingly duped, you know, or they missed this massive fraud because they, too, are among the big donors to this foundation. So it's a mess that touches famous donors, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Pritzker Foundation. Multiple governments around the world have been defrauded here. And, you know, as happens throughout government. And in parts of our government, there are great people who really do roll up their sleeves and come to work and take their job seriously and feel fulfilled and enrich the lives of many people doing important work. Don't get me wrong. They're good people in government. But there are also bounders and crooks every bit as ruthless as the worst sorts in business and elsewhere who view this as a complete joke. I mean, there evidently is, you know, we look at the way things seem to work. You know, if you're well-connected politically, you get off scot-free. If you're not well-connected politically and people want to make an example of you, you get made an example of. Witness what Schneiderman is doing here in New York. He's giving the Clintons a complete pass. There's no part of the paperwork of the Clinton Foundation that is compliant with the law. No part. Yet, Schneiderman has the power, as he did with the Trump Foundation, to look at a file without going through any sort of a back and forth and just order the charity to cease fundraising. Schneiderman should have done this a long time ago. Before him, Cuomo should have done it. Before him, Spitzer should have done it. A long time ago. This has been a rogue charity in New York since the first day it did business in 1998. Yet, it has been allowed to file false and materially misleading statements and to continue fundraising right now for Matthew. I mean, there are people who are probably sending money over the Internet right now, you know, in New York City towards the Clinton Foundation, thinking that it might end up in Hurricane Matthew. More than likely, it's going to pay for Chelsea Clinton's expensive preschool for her daughter. I mean, there's no control over this.
And the Clintons seem to have staked their claim on Haiti as their private turf, that, you know, we do not wish to have any other government or any other entity control Haiti. This is ours. Everything that happens in Haiti, it's all about us. We control everything from the president to whether there should be, as they call it now politely, regime change, that is staging a coup to remove the president, then putting somebody in that they like. They have access. In fact, they have possession of licenses to the most precious assets of Haiti. It's gold. It's oil. Haiti has a very large reservoir of oil. People may not know that. It's minerals. And it's people and their labor. And all of this is happening, and it has reached a point where the Clintons are so brazen. They're in your face with it. You know, there was Hillary Clinton standing in front of a poster, I would never forget that, saying, Haiti is open for business. I mean who talks like that? I mean, who conducts that kind of a public relations effort to encourage trade, supposedly, when you own everything and you control everything in Haiti? And this, by the way, involves, people even say, we have really nasty things happening. We have death squads and whatnot attached to a lot of the underhanded things that are going on in Haiti. And yet, neither of the Clintons has been attached to any of this. So now the Hurricane Matthew hits, more misery, and they surface in the sight of some articles that had begun to surface, like this, the reporting we're doing here, the reporting you have done elsewhere, and New York. I mean, the Washington Post and other newspapers beginning now to expose the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation, foreign governments now beginning inquiries, foreign investigative journalists now beginning to do inquiries about them. But despite that, they continue as if nothing is ever going to touch them. And that is a marvelous kind of sociopathic way to operate. It bewilders me, but it is happening.
It really is disgusting. It's as if, I mean, we're not talking here about, you know, in theory, uneducated people who, you know, have never read a book and, you know, have no interest in history. We're talking about, in the Clintons, all three of them, people who have umpty-ump different graduate-level degrees and credentials and honors and this and that. It's as if, you know, I can't speak about Chelsea because I really haven't looked very carefully at her background and her, what she's done. But it's as if her parents, who are roughly 10 years older than I am, went through the 60s and actually decided, when they heard all the tales of 19th century, you know, colonialism, exploitation around the world, they said, you know what, that's really terrible. We should do it too. it's just crazy stuff. I mean, that generation, generally speaking, you know, were moved. It was a a very interesting period in American history where accepted norms were challenged, and most of the people of their generation were anti-colonialists. I mean, this is the worst excesses of colonialism being practiced in Haiti. And I think, you know, again, this could be an opportunity if we really roll up our sleeves. I was very touched last week when our mutual friend asked me to go and stand with a number of Haitians in front of Schneiderman's office. I was moved at you know, who those people were. These were not these were ordinary people who've been in this country for a long time, have deep roots in Haiti, and had other things they might have done, probably work, and took time away from their day to get up and very vigorously for long periods of time try to educate fellow New Yorkers about the excesses of the Clintons in this country. And, you know, we're not, our country is a rich country. It has many faults. It has many pluses. We have done a lot of good around the world, but we all, when we screw up, we really screw up. Ask anybody in the Middle East. But, you know, here in Haiti, geographically close to America. There are a lot of Haitian Americans. You know, if we're going to have a test case for foreign aid, you know, there's blood on our hands in Haiti. Republicans, Democrats, neutral, men, women, children, grandchildren, husbands, wives, single. There is blood on our hands in Haiti. And before we start making more promises, you know, in the next administration about what we're going to do around the world, we've got to do right by Haiti. I mean, it shouldn't be that complicated.
And we also have to demand a response from Barack Obama.
Exactly.
We have to. He and his administration clearly have been giving coverage, protective coverage to the Clintons while they sack this country, Haiti. Just today, though, some emails have come to light that suggest that within the Clinton Foundation, they're very much aware that they're not on the right side of the law. Could you talk a bit about that?
Sure. That was very interesting. You know, and I found this in other cases that, and why I decided way back last year to get involved here is that when there's a trail of evidence and you haven't seen it all, it means people are hiding things and eventually that trail is going to come out. So what you're referring to, I think, is John Podesta, who is a longtime operative. He and his brother, Tony, have various and sundry political organizations, supposed charities, political operations. And John Podesta was brought in to be really to make the White House work in that awful period. I think it was either 97, 98, towards the end of his Bill's second term, when he was impeached but not convicted, and when there were all these scandals and negotiations and everything. Podesta was in the center of that. He was in the center of the Clinton Foundation actually being formed. And then he went off and he worked, I think, at the center, he either founded or worked at the Center for American Progress, which is supposedly a progressive think tank, political operation, and various and sundry other things, including, you know, working in a political consulting capacity as a lobbyist, an advisor for many campaigns and foreign governments and this and that. So he's a veteran Washington, D.C. guy along with his brother. And what happened was, and what piqued my interest initially in this whole project was an article that was written, I think, on the 16th or so of August 2013 in the New York Times, unease over Clinton Foundation finances with some a title like that. It's linked in the story that I wrote in March of 2015 that kicked this off with so many red flags. Why isn't the IRS auditing the Clinton Foundation? Well, what happened was, a premier law firm. I actually started, and when I was 18, I was a proofreader at this law firm. It's called Simpson Thatcher. It's a wonderful firm, a very powerful law firm whose origins are here in New York City, but it's now an international firm. And there are a number of lawyers there who carved out decades ago a practice of advising these big foundations how to operate within the constraints of the law. And in particular, there's a woman there named Victoria Bjorklund, who is, just from her resume, a wonderful human being. This is an expert PhD, I think, in medieval studies, who then went and got involved in the law and, of course, punched the lights out everywhere she went and studied, became a lawyer and then a partner at Simpson Thatcher, focusing on this area. So much so that she was regularly asked to be, you know, on this advisory committee for the IRS and this for that government place. And before long, she's actually one of the co-authors of the leading textbook used by practicing lawyers to think through how you run a foundation properly under New York law. So this person, this firm was hired, the record shows, and the emails that just came out today reinforce this, beginning in late October 2011 to study what was going on. And contemporaneously with the emails talking about the Simpson-Thatcher work is a revelation that the chief operating officer, I think her name was Laura Graham, according to the, if these emails are not invented, was on the brink of suicide. She was so concerned, according to one of these emails, about the awful state of the Clinton Foundation in 2011, that she is quoted as talking on the phone, I think it was to Doug Band, with one foot on the brake and one foot on the gas, with her car poised to go off into the water to kill herself. She was so overstressed by all the infighting and all the troubles at the Clinton Foundation. Well, I believe I know why that is. In 2011, the Clinton Foundation was diabolically operating outside the law. It had attempted a reorganization, lying under oath, creating numerous new charities. All of its financial statements were a fraud. There was no control. Hundreds of millions of dollars was missing. And this poor woman, Laura Graham, was going to be tagged with a problem because she was the chief operating officer. And her biography shows in an application to create this Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund, which, by the way, Barack Obama contributed money to, in 2010, with Michelle, substantial money, over $200,000, mentions that Laura Graham was centrally involved in raising money, in theory, to go to tsunami victims in 2004-05, in theory, to go to Katrina victims in 2005-06, and in connection with these other frauds. So she was involved in all this, and as a guess, what happens, you know, these schemes of the Clintons and other politicians, they sound too good to be true, which means they're false. But they sound too good to be true, and a lot of dupes will say, oh, well, Bill Clinton's going to do that. He's a smart guy. I'll help him out. And, you know, they start rushing headlong, as they're rushing now in Matthew. Money flies towards them, and, you know, they need to get people around, the Clintons need to get people around them who will not ask tough questions. And you'd be very happy to have a job. And maybe that's Laura Graham. Maybe she was just content to be in the orbit of the Clintons and have a big title and whatever, and would just overlooked all this, didn't understand what was really going on. I hope it's not the case that Laura Graham, you know, centrally understands all this, that, you know, that she's the fraudster and she's been swindling from the Clintons. I don't think that's the case, though. I think it's, you know, this is a pattern over many different disasters at home, abroad, many different countries, many different donors, and it just proves a point. I mean, Warren Buffett, I disagree with him on many, many things, but on this topic I agree with him. He said it's very difficult to give large sums of money away effectively, and the reason for that is, you know, people who have an idea to help in Haiti, it's not as if that's the first time anyone ever thought of that. There are quite a few organizations already in Haiti who have been trying to operate there for a long time, you know, and it's not as if some brand new operation is immediately going to do things better than the ones that are already there. And so we don't ask the kind of questions we need to ask about. We don't hold trustees of charities to account. We don't make it a crime, as we should in this country. When people, Americans in this country, raise money and obtain tax deductions for donors, and then allow that money to be stolen, taken by the trustees, taken by friends of the trustees, and when the aims of the charity are not served and people are harmed internationally, we need to make an example of people like that. We need to put them in prison. That's far more serious, in my view, bringing down a country like Haiti, than even a major drug bust here inside this country. I mean, you're taking the good name of millions of Americans, generous Americans, kind-hearted Americans, and you're calling into question by allowing this activity, you're calling into question the good relief work that we do around the world. In places like Russia, where people are suspicious of charities, this becomes a case study. And, you know, for many, many reasons, These are people who think they are smart enough, think they are respected enough, that they want to go reoccupy the White House again, and then heaven help us. So these aren't people who you could say are naive, you know, or just stumble or didn't know the rules. These are lawyers. You know, Hillary.
Well, eventually they became lawyers, and you know they had trouble passing the bar in the case of Hillary Clinton. And then once they became lawyers, Bill had to give up his license for a little while there because of perjury. So, yeah, they're lawyers, but they're a particular kind of lawyer. I want to ask about the indication in the emails that an effort was made to resituate Bill Clinton within the foundation for his legal protection, because it was clear that he was in very serious trouble. If anybody had decided to take a hard look at the Clinton Foundation, he would have been just devoured by any such inquiry. And an effort was made by Podesta to give him a little bit of a buffer, you know, so that he's not immediately accountable, but a couple of layers of protection for him.
Well, I think the issues there are the following: that you know, he, as a former president, he was given an office up in Harlem at taxpayer expense that was supposed to be used, for good things, and likely, you know, should not be used to operate the largest unprosecuted charity fraud in American history. So there are probably a set of issues attached to how much of this illegal fundraising was carried out from the Harlem office starting in, I think, July 2001 and afterwards. And I think the answer to that question is an awful lot of it. And the people in New York State, the Attorney General Charity Bureau's office, really need to take a hard look at this because they have the forms. They, you know, I've actually been in touch with them, and I've gotten some of the forms. I don't believe they're giving me all the forms. I think they're still trying to protect the Clintons. But they know. They know what the Clintons actually filed in regard to that office. And they know that the Clinton Foundation has not properly registered, for example, Clinton Foundation HIV AIDS Initiative, Inc., which was formed March 24th. The answer to that question is an awful lot of it. Yeah. And the people in New York State, the Attorney General Charity Bureau's office, really need to take a hard look at this because they have the forms. They, you know, I've actually been in touch with them and I've gotten some of the forms. I don't believe they're giving me all the forms. I think they're still trying to protect the Clintons. But they know. They know what the Clintons actually filed in regard to that office. And they know that the Clinton Foundation has not properly registered, for example, Clinton Foundation HIV AIDS Initiative, Inc., which was formed March 24th. The answer to that question is an awful lot of it. Yeah. And the people in New York State, the Attorney General Charity Bureau's office, really need to take a hard look at this because they have the forms. They, you know, I've actually been in touch with them and I've gotten some of the forms. I don't believe they're giving me all the forms. I think they're. I don't know what happened there, Yatrice. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, it started talking over me. But anyway.
Yeah.
So you have a problem with Bill's activities. What he was doing, it appears, is he was holding meetings with people around the world, discussing projects, likely using Doug Band and Justin Cooper and a bunch of other names, to concoct various for-profit, not-for-profit projects. And then when the dust settled, monies would be wired various places and people would figure out, you know, what to say actually happened. That's no way to run a railroad. I mean, that's not the way you're supposed to run your life in a charity. You're supposed to have a charity. It cannot be, under U.S. law, cannot be a loose association of individuals with no rules and no governance. You can't do that. Just if you want to operate a hospital in Little Rock, you can't do it that way. But you certainly cannot operate an international charity the way they did operate and are operating the Clinton Foundation. So it came a moment.
An interesting thing that the Clintons seem to be doing, and this involves race here, it seems as if they purposely select high-profile African Americans and put them in particular positions so that even if something were to happen, they would be the face of the defense of the Clintons. Did that strike you as odd?
It really does. I mean, it's disgraceful on so many levels. I mean, we all know my roommate at Harvard Business School was from a poor, my first year roommate was from a poor family in poor part of California, and he blew the lights out at Harvard Business School. Al Fraser, he was a fantastic individual, amazingly smart guy. There are plenty of highly competent, standout, exemplary, honorable African-American executives who could function in and help the Clinton Foundation, help the Clintons in what they do. But it seems they've just assembled a large number of people who are prepared to cover up for the Clintons, to cover up for these crimes, to obstruct investigations, and then to mirror their activities. I mean, you look at, for example, to pick on one person, Cheryl Mills. She set up something called Black Ivy, which appears to be doing the same sort of stuff that the Clinton Foundation and the Clintons have done. Again, she operates in Tanzania and Ghana with other Clinton former operatives, doing the same sort of questionable deals, using political connections to create advantage. Now, not just to back up a little bit, the Clintons are not the only people in government who do this kind of stuff. Republicans do it. And I think Americans are not being served properly here. When our government officials make decisions that have economic consequences, there needs to be better visibility into who gains from that. And a better assessment needs to be made of, are these contributions that go to politicians disguised bribes? And I think
that we have the appointment or the contract to Mitchell Titus, one of the most well-known accounting firms. How did they manage to accept such an assignment if they maybe they had no clue about the irregularities, or maybe they never looked? What do you think is the reason they accepted that appointment?
Well, I think, the accounting is a tough business, and frankly speaking, when you're dealing with certified professional accountants, people who have passed the test and have been around for a while, there's little difference between one accountant and another. So it's tough to cultivate business. And if you can tell your friends, President Clinton and President Bush, in a rare degree of, friendship, these are two bitter rivals, feuding families, they got together and they're helping in Haiti, and when they needed an accounting firm to look at their books, they could have hired anybody, but they hired us. And it's a great marketing gimmick. And in a world where it's tough to get new business, you can say, two former presidents on either ends of the political spectrum, they're not going to defraud the public. I mean, they've got to be doing good work. We don't need to check it that carefully. I mean, it's expensive to go down to Haiti. We could just take their word for it. I mean, they never cheat anybody. And you see that. I mean, this Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund is a joke. The accounting statements are a joke. Every single accounting statement of any part of the Clinton Foundation, the BKD, Boy King David firm out of their Little Rock office, that should be, the whole office should be shut down and moved lock, stock, and barrel to the nastiest prison in Arkansas. I mean, it's just ridiculous what they have done since October 23rd, 1997, their involvement. And then you have a litany of other firms. There's a firm, I've got no problem using a small accounting firm of decent people, but there's a firm called Gary McGee and Company in Portland that audits Alliance for a Healthier Generation, a complete fraud. And when you Google that firm with the word fraud, you discover why the Clintons likely selected it, because that firm missed a case where an old woman walked in and said, "Can I help you? I made money. I don't need a salary. I'd like to be your bookkeeper." And in a classic, the classic ploy, we rolled right in and started embezzling money from the charity, and he missed that. So after that case was exposed, the Clintons decided this would be a perfect accounting firm to use.
Our kind of firm.
Right. And to me, I mean, I've been in many board meetings involving charities as a trustee with people who take this kind of stuff seriously. So I know that there are, this is an exception. This is not all charities are like this. So it needs to be exposed fully, and people need to be punished. You know, I know that Donald Trump last night said apparently that he wants a special prosecutor to go look at Hillary Clinton. You don't need to wait for a special prosecutor here. Any attorney general in this country, today, right now, I actually just got an email from the Attorney General of California's office before I went on here. I haven't read it yet to see what it says. It probably says, well, we're going to follow Schneiderman's example. We won't look at this either. But any one of the 50 attorneys general could open an investigation into this thing, cause the fundraising to cease, get inside see the real emails, the real traffic involving this, and then fully expose it. And let the trustees pay the penalties. Let the Clintons pay the penalties they deserve here. And then let's go through a process, a grieving process. Let's understand what really happened here. And then let's change the rules together, progressives and conservatives together. Because progressives and conservatives and everyone else, we all love charities. We all help them. Let's make the rules really work for people, for the donors, for grieved people in Haiti. And let's stop the carnage. Because this is really diabolically bad stuff going on here.
Well, we have to stop right there. We're out of time for this program, but so much was shared. I just want to reinforce with listeners that what you've been getting here from Charles Ortel, who is a recognized expert on the Clinton Foundation, having dismantled AIG, General Electric, and General Motors, for also committing various degrees of fraud, that we're getting the benefit of extraordinary insight and expertise, and you're ahead of everybody on the subject. But we are also ahead of linking the activities of this foundation in Haiti and in the black world, which is where they specialize in doing their mischief. They select the black world. And yet you watch the anomaly here, the tragedy of all these elected officials, black elected officials, and mobilizing the black community to support a person who has done so much damage deliberately in the black world. Thanks so much, Charles, for joining us today. And we look forward to further news coming out of the emails and what they suggest that the Clintons and possibly even the Obama administration knew but did nothing. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Yutri.
Thanks. Keep it right here on PRN.FM. I appreciate you joining me today. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. We did not get to the great debate today, so it's on the menu tomorrow. Bye-bye.